Hey there, everyone. Pat St. John here. I'm sitting right next to Pat Murphy from the Aviation Weather Center, sitting out on the pavilion, I guess I could say, or the porch, facing the main runway here, right in front of EAA Radio, the building. It's a nice day out here. That rain will avoid us for right now, and looking like we will be able to get through a wonderful day of the air show without much of a hitch at all.
Yeah, you know, those thunderstorms that were moving in moved to the south of us, and now we got some beautiful cirrus over us to shade the sun a little bit.
Of shade, exactly, yeah. Exactly. Well, as I said, Pat Murphy from the Aviation Weather Center is here. He's sitting over in the Federal Aviation or Federal Building, right up the road here. What are the street names? Let's think here.
Oh, you shouldn't have asked me the street names. It's the Federal Pavilion. It's just half a block down from where we are here at EAA Radio.
Okay, well, there now we know. And there's even a little bit of cool air blowing in there continuously, keeping us nice and cool. And there's even I stopped over there earlier today. There's a hurricane simulator there that's pretty sweet.
Did you check that out?
I know, I have not. I need to, though, you know, cool off a little bit. We get that 90-mile-an-hour wind.
Actually, we stop it at 78, which is the minimum Category 1 hurricane.
So minimum Category 1. So that 78 miles an hour would be you're standing in a Category 1 hurricane.
That's right. But we don't put in the sand and glass.
Darn it. Yeah, it'd be more fun that way, though. You got to close your eyes and hope.
That's right. Hold on.
No chairs are flying through.
Occasional chair now and then.
Every once in a while throwing at him.
We'll throw a chair at him.
Okay. Well, you know what happens.
Yeah.
So the Aviation Weather Center does do... You know, pretty sure everyone knows, they all do the aviation weather, of course. But domestic forecast, now that is, what exactly would you guys do for that?
We do mainly en route stuff, aeromats and sigmats. Those are kind of like our watches and warnings.
Okay.
And then we do those for the entire CONUS. We've got area forecasts. We've got that are kind of like TAFs. For where there isn't an airport or where there isn't a TAF. So there's about 600 airports across the United States that the Weather Service does TAFs for, and these area forecasts cover everything else.
I gotcha.
That's giving you ceiling, visibility, weather. Mm-hmm. It actually is a good place for cloud tops. So
now you guys do international forecasts with it.
We do.
And now what are the other... weather services that you guys work together with? Do you guys work together with any other national weather services?
Oh, absolutely. We're ICAO, the International Civil Aviation Organization, has set up a world area forecast system, and in that there's two forecast centers in the world, one in the UK, United Kingdom, and one in the United States. And we work very closely with our friends in Britain. We back them up; they back us up. We're issuing worldwide forecast of turbulence, icing, thunderstorms, jet streams. We do the SIG weather charts globally.
So you guys usually use all the same warnings.
We do, yeah.
Okay, so that is definitely helpful. Yeah. I mean, in the local categories of the National Weather Service, I'm sure it's completely different everywhere else. You know, there's tornado warnings, but I'm sure everyone's got their own different categories and stuff.
Well,
but
no, we try to keep that pretty consistent.
Do they? Okay.
Yeah. Everyone's got their own criteria. And we do the same thing. Within the Weather Service, the criteria are pretty much set the same. And then for the international stuff, when we're working internationally, we work with ICAO to set international standards. So when we say one thing in America, it means the same thing in India.
Well, that's very good to hear for you know, the pilots that are flying internationally. They
Absolutely.
Don't have to get out their little book and figure out who's saying what.
Yeah. One of the more fun things is we've been asked to start backing up some countries in the Caribbean and South America. So Jamaica and Mexico and the Dominican Republic.
Well, I'm sure you guys made a few friends down there
with the Gulf of Mexico kind of stuff.
Oh,
yeah. We've been doing a lot to support the Gulf of Mexico, the oil spill down there. We do on a day-to-day basis. We do a lot. You know, a lot of people, this BP thing has come up. A lot of people don't realize there's 30,000 people living and working on various oil platforms out in the Gulf.
Really?
And all those folks are supplied by helicopter operations. 1.3 million helicopter flights in the Gulf of Mexico a year to support all these oil rigs and all the people living and working on them. So we provide the forecast for those. Those are usually lower-level operations. So
mm-hmm.
They're significantly impacted by lower clouds, IFR, MVFR conditions. So very data-sparse area, so it's a challenge for the forecasters to get accurate forecast out there. But they do what they can and provide that service.
Now, you guys have the buoys that are sitting in the Gulf of Mexico. Were those some of those affected by the oil at all?
I don't believe they have been. No, they've as far as I know, they're still operating pretty good and haven't been infected.
Well, that's a good thing. Now, the National Weather Service, is the Aviation Weather Center part of that's part of NOAA? But are you guys like how are you structured between National Weather Service and you have the Climate CPC, and then you have AWC. Now, how are they all? You guys work together? Do you have like a meeting every week and talk together, or how does that?
We talk daily. You know, everyone's familiar with their local forecast office, and there's 122 of those, and those are the folks that are giving you the high and low temperature and the chance of rain today in your hometown. They're issuing the local warnings and tornado warnings and thunderstorm warnings for your area, and they each of those 122 offices issue TAFs for the local airports in their area. So we work with them on what they're putting in the TAFs. Also, the other part of the Weather Service, there's 9 national centers. There's the National or the Storm Prediction Center in Norman, Oklahoma. Yeah, they issue the watches for severe thunderstorms and tornadoes. There's the National Hurricane Center. You mentioned the Climate Prediction Center, and then of course the Aviation Weather Center. There's 21 air traffic control centers across the U.S. that I'm sure most pilots are familiar with, and there's a Weather Service unit in each one of those to brief the controllers, and in an emergency they can talk directly to a pilot. So you've got the Aviation Weather Center, the 21 CWSU Center Weather Service units, and 122 forecast offices all looking at the weather, all communicating daily, if not hourly, on what the forecast is. We're looking at the local forecast. The local guys are looking at the big picture forecast that we put out. They're considering our air mets for icing and other things and writing their TAFs. And
now, for the warnings and everything, for you guys and even for the local places, do they issue the warnings themselves, or does, like, I know convective outlooks are put by SPC, but does SPC issue these warnings, or do the local areas issue these?
The local forecast office actually issues the warnings, and that's for just about any warning, except for aviation warnings, and that's done by the Aviation Weather Center in Kansas City.
Okay.
And of course, our aviation warnings are called SIGMETS.
SIGMETS.
Right. So we're doing that for icing, severe icing, severe turbulence, obviously for convection. We put out a convective SIGMET every hour. Even if there's no convection anywhere in the U.S., we'll at least put out a convective SIGMET that says, hey, no problem. So.
Yeah, exactly. I was looking at the updated stuff that you guys, you mentioned yesterday that there was the new product that you had guys put together. What was that called?
Well, we talked about a lot of products. Probably the graphical air map.
Yes, that was it.
Yeah.
I looked at that today, and it's actually very easy to read through versus I found a link to the older one, and it's just jumbled everywhere, and it's a little harder to find.
And that's what we're really facing these days. You know, a lot of the products for aviation, they're coded. They use acronyms, and they use abbreviations. And that really was to facilitate teletype machines back in the 1940s, 50s, and 60s. And then as new computer systems came on board in the 70s, we could expand a little bit. But, you know, we have to use all capital letters and dot, dot, dot instead of a comma. And, you know, just like you said, the graphical products are a lot more intuitive and can be communicated computer to computer. So we're working with the FAA and the pilot community to modernize these products, make them more understandable, more intuitive, and easier to get. So as more cockpits get more sophisticated and can handle more computer input, we're going to be right there plugging more weather information in.
I was going to say, you guys, hopefully one of these days they'll be able to use the touchscreen on the plane and find where you guys are, and then it gives them warnings and everything with GPS data and all that.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that kind of stuff?
It is, you know, and it's a two-way street. Communicating and getting pilot reports for us is very important. We don't have METAR observing stations up, you know, at 10,000 feet, so we need the pilot to tell us if there's turbulence, what kind of turbulence, the same thing with icing and what they're seeing and hearing. And that's hard for pilots to do, especially if they are in bad weather. But some of the sophisticated equipment that's being built, you know, the airplane knows how fast it's going. It's measuring the wind speed outside. It knows where it is if it's got GPS. So, you know, it's not too far away. I know a lot of these companies, that navigation companies, are making the hardware where you're a pilot, you push a PIREP button, and you hit turbulence if you want to put a PIREP for turbulence, and the machine and the airplane do the rest and send that out. And that really helps the meteorologist. If pilots want more accurate forecasts, the best thing they can do is flood us with pilot reports.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, then you light up the screens of full of information versus having to guesstimate between the two to see where something's going on.
Yeah, that's right. There's never, ever been a day where we've had too many PIREPs.
Well, that's a good thing for everyone to know.
Absolutely.
Now with the airplanes and everything, GPS-wise, are you guys looking also to maybe even track to see, you know, if they do get turbulence, do you know exactly how much of a fluctuation they're moving and everything, even down to very minor details, or what kind of information is it sending?
Absolutely. There's some of them right now. It's a larger aircraft. They've got sensors on board that can measure horizontal and vertical acceleration. So the value of eddy dissipation rate comes off of the airlines. And that, you know, that's not just a pilot's opinion of how bad the turbulence is. It's a measurement with equipment. So we can compare this eddy dissipation rate from this aircraft to another one, compare that to the meteorological conditions, and really get the forecast a lot more accurate.
Well, yeah, it's like they're driving a METAR station by themselves.
Absolutely, you know? Yeah.
And they, now, as you said before, there's some airplanes that actually do report them automatically. Was that?
Well, right now it's just the data is being collected, and then once the aircraft lands or as it's landing through its communications, we can download that. We're working with the airlines to get that data. We're putting a lot of that data into our numerical models right now, getting it in the hands of forecasters.
Okay, so now that's helping out with knowing all of the issues that come about with weather problems and causing delays and all that, and I'm sure that's not fun either.
No, you know, delays are cost the U.S. economy more than hurricanes each year.
More than hurricanes.
Just 2007, I know the number was about $41 billion that impacted the U.S. economy.
In just delays of airplanes.
Just delays. And 70% of all aircraft delays are weather-related. So when we get better pilot reports, when we get better measurements off of sensors off of aircraft, and we get those integrated into the forecast process, we're going to see better forecasts. We're going to see more accurate forecasts, more resolution in the forecast, and that's going to bring those delays down and start saving the economy some money.
Well, that's a very good thing. And with the new radar that's coming out, there's the new radar technologies that's coming out with GR3 level data and everything like that high-res data.
Even more significant than the high-res data is we're starting to put polarized radars on all our radars, our Doppler radars.
Now, what does that mean per se?
That polarizes, that sets the beam and polarizes it in certain directions, a horizontal and a vertical direction, so we can actually measure the difference in shape of a raindrop. And we can then get really accurate icing information. We can see where the freezing level is. And really start to improve the icing forecast, which will be really significant.
I gotcha. Well, that definitely helps with understanding the weather too, with having the polarized radar. You know, it's so amazing to finally learn that. Everyone always thinks, oh, those meteorologists can't get it right. Anyways, it's like, well, we're working on the technology aspect. You know, it's pretty hard to figure out what Mother Nature really wants to do when it's the entire world makes an effect. You know, something in China is going to affect us.
Yeah, yep. And the more we can measure it, the more we can forecast it. So we're moving forward.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a very good thing to move forward finally, or I shouldn't say finally, but over time, hopefully, you know, by the 2050, we'll be able to just type it into your phone, and you'll know exactly where you are and exact times. It'll rain and everything, be a lot better.
I think it'll be quicker than 2050.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah. All right.